What's good, everyone? Welcome to the Taiwan Century. I am the crazy guy with the 43 Taiwan-related tattoos, Yank. And I'm here with my brother from across the pond, Brent. What is good, my brother? What's up?
Good evening. Slightly less enthusiastic on my side, but, you know, that's our personalities. 43 tattoos, man. That's a lot of ink.
A lot of them, and they're worth every single dollar I spent on these. I'm getting more in the future, but not now, which when I come back from Taiwan, I'll get more. I'm going to work on my chest now since I lost 40 pounds. So I'm going to get some on my chest for Taiwan, like the Papa logo. I'm going to get that in the future. I'm going to get a lot of more tattoos for Taiwan. So I'm going to get a whole body on my chest on Taiwan to show my love again. So
it's crazy. And what do you want to talk about this week?
We're going to do something different. We're doing the military topic. This is going to be a really interesting topic for us to do. So let's hit it off.
Oh, a bit of War and Peace. Very Leo Tolstoy. Okay, well, I guess I'll start. Funnily enough, yesterday I was actually reading the Australian Strategic Policy Institute's Deterring an Attack on Taiwan, Policy Options for India and Other Non-Belligerent States. So that was fun. And I know after we spoke last week about the UK, I've done a little bit of research on that. And I'm starting to think that new Taiwanese sub might be full of UK technology.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I know that with the sub, whatever, they got some technology from South Korea. That part I have read, but they followed the UK model. Never know that.
I mean, I'm willing to bet there's a lot of UK technology riddled into there. Boris Johnson at the time was very pro-Taiwan. You know, he sent carrier strike groups to the Indo-Pacific. He started basing more troops out here. And I can't find concrete proof. All I can find are whispers. But these whispers are not, we didn't do that. It was, oh, it's interesting you think that. So, you know. No. Well, I mean, I guess if we're talking about the military, we should talk about the obvious world threat, eh? The CCP, ever so friendly neighborhood.
Yep, the country that every day sends about, 10 to 15 fire jets in Taiwan's ADIZ. And then according to a report by Asian Nikki, I think it's called Nick Iron Nikki, I forgot how you pronounce it. It has been reported that China has about 4 battleships around Taiwan at all times. So,
I mean,
yeah,
Taiwan's air defense zone, it's a bit over the top because it still includes half of China, you know, I'm not sure necessarily. I think that's a little more overly dramatic than a major threat. Sure, they are belligerent, and yes, they are constantly gray zone tactics, but I don't know. I wouldn't count a lot of news I see on the air defense identification zone because it's bloody huge.
Yes, and if you look at the Taiwan Strait, look how narrow that body of water is. It's about 100 miles apart from Taiwan and China. I usually tell people, like my father, compare the Taiwan Strait to a big highway from Cincinnati to Columbus. That's how big the Taiwan Strait is, but with water instead of a highway. So if China were to invade Taiwan, they would have a difficult time going to the main island because of the fact that the Taiwan Strait is very unfriendly waters. I think only around 2 months out of the year that the Taiwan Strait is calm. I think that's around April and October.
Well, you know, I think Taiwan's pretty well equipped. You know, you've got some of the best radar stations hidden in the mountains there. They got the new F-16s. What do we get, 200 of them? And that brings their spec up to equal or better than the US standard F-16 equipment. And I know, you know, probably the US doesn't use their F-16s anymore. They've got some fancier toys, but it's still a hell of a sting for anyone who tries to fly across that strait.
Plus two, whatever. People don't realize that for China to invade Taiwan successfully, they got to do a Normandy times 10. Because when the Allies was practicing this, it was real difficult to do. So imagine the PRC trying to get onto the Taiwan beaches, and Taiwan doesn't have many beaches that they can access. So if China were to go on beaches on the west side of Taiwan, it's going to be difficult to land because in the back of you, there's water. So you can't escape. You can't just, you know, say, oh, we got to reverse. We got to go. No. As soon as you land on Taiwan, you're going to get hit by bullets. You're going to get hit by everything that the Taiwan army is going to hit you with. So an amphibious assault is going to be real difficult for China to pull off at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them doing it anytime in the near future. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about 2027, but I think it's going to be a lot cheaper and easier for them to just keep influencing elections, especially if they don't change the standard of elections in Taiwan. They'll work out some configuration where they can have a candidate win with 27% and then jobs are good. But, you know, I certainly do believe in our lifetime war with China is inevitable, because where do they stop? You know, I was quite pleased to see William Lai this week say he would rather build all seven submarines at once rather than, you know, one after the other. I think that shows a bit more defensive thinking. It shows a bit more of a rigid backbone than Tsai currently has.
Right. And let me get to that point. Did you know the Taiwan's military submarine program has been going on for decades? What I mean by that, back in the early 2000s, the Taiwanese government actually, let me backtrack, the Bush administration approved these diesel-electric submarines for Taiwan, but never came to fruition because of a couple things. The war on terror happened, so America's trying to, you know, get China on its side to fight the war on terror in the Middle East, along with the fact that the KMT-led legislature, back in the day, they had a lot of members in the legislature. There was down the force over the Chen administration. They basically blocked Chen's went into body submarines 69 times. That is insane. That they don't see.
I didn't know that.
Here's why. The KMT thinks that any bill of the military is provocative to China. And I always ask myself this, like, wait a minute, KMT. Didn't you build a large military back in your day where you tried to take back the mainland that never came to fruition. So what are you talking about here? Back in the day, you used to spend half the country's GDP on retaking back the mainland, but it never happened for you because you realize how impossible that operation would have became. So now we have the Chinese threat that wants to take over Taiwan, and every year they always increase their defense budget, the POA that is. And now you think, oh, it's too provocative. No, it's not provocative. You have to arm yourself to show that, hey, if you come to my territory or whatever, we're going to defeat you. Ronald Reagan said the following thing, peace through strength. And that is what Lai Ching-te is going to follow in his administration.
Yeah. I certainly think he's going to try and stamp his mark, you know, visit some islands, stir things up. I'm sure he'll toe by the party line on the ROC. You know, it's still existing. We are an independent state, but good for him being more on the defense. Have you seen the Anping class fast attack ships, the Coast Guard convertibles?
Those things are stunning, man. Yes, they are.
What I always thought about was, what about the little crappy ships, the littoral combat ships the US has? Nobody wants them. Give them to Taiwan.
Taiwan. There you go. And Taiwan will refurbish them, of course, and make them even better because Taiwan has the technology to do so. Also, too, the technology in those American ships are US made. So the configuration will be easy for Taiwan to do. So, yeah, give all those ships to Taiwan. And that way, Taiwan can have a stronger military, because if they have a stronger military, it'll make Xi Jinping think twice of invading Taiwan, because if you see Taiwan have all these weapons and aiming to defend themselves, they're going to say, okay, this isn't the day to invade Taiwan.
What do you think about the national service stuff that's come out recently? A legislator saying they should have retired women should be kept as reservists, and perhaps we should look at changing the whole national service, set up something a little bit more like Israel, potentially Singapore. I agree with that myself. You know, it was interesting because this week there's been a lot of discussions in the UK about returning to national service. We've had the current administration have been in charge for 14 years and they've just gutted our defence budget year after year. And so now it's reached a point where it's, if we were to stand up to a near peer or kind of stronger than us adversary, put your teeth in, Liam, bad guy, then do we have the troops and the numbers? And I don't think we do, and neither do UK generals. So it's become, well, what kind of conscription can we look at? I certainly think Taiwan should look more into that. What do you think about foreigners joining the ROC armed forces? That would be interesting. Put the YouTubers' money where their mouth is.
There was one that I read, and me and you read the same biography. It's under a guy named T.C. Lin. I forgot which...
Barbarian at the Gates.
Yes, him. Yeah. He served in Taiwan's military, and I agree with that. Hell, if I had Taiwanese nationality, I'll be more happy to serve in the army. I'm only 33 years old, so I'll be more happy to serve.
Well, what was interesting... Hell, put me on the front line. So during the process of getting my Taiwan passport, that was something that came up, because if you complete the process, you'd be liable for conscription because of the age I was when I started it. The bureaucrats took as long as they did, and I've since aged out of the process. But yeah, that would have been an interesting conversation. Just me showing up at the gates. Hello there, can I come in? What?
It's like, who are you? Who are you? Why are you here? Did you get lost? Don't say stuff like that to you. Like, did you get lost or whatever?
But to answer your... the nearest 7-Eleven. So, I mean, what do you think is going to be a plan with regards to China? Like, how can we land more of a body shot? Because the AUKUS, that was a body shot. You know, that was the US, Australia, UK alliance. You know, that landed a heavy blow. Taiwan doesn't really seem to have anything in the tank to land any more heavy blows to change things up. You know, closing the Hudson Embassy, that was a good body shot on the Chinese. The CCP, I should say. Tariffs, those worked too, but Taiwan's very much, now we don't get to sell a few pineapples. So what's your plan? What's the China plan for you? You're the president of the ROC, Naji. What are you going to do first?
First of all, I'm going to raise the defense budget to 3.5%, like Israel and the United States, because if with a higher GDP budget towards defense, it shows not only to our allies and to our enemies that we're serious on committing to invest in our own defense military. I will keep the description. I'll do it for 2 years, because with a two-year service, you get more training, you get more experience for combat. Also, too, I'll make the Hangguan, which is their military exercise every year. They do it twice a year through computer simulation and real practice. I do the real practice twice. I'll do one for the summer, also do one for the winter, because that way we prepare ourselves no matter what season China were to invade us, we'll be ready no matter what. I will also bolster our missile production, like the Yunfeng missiles. I'll boost production for those, and I will also
NCSIST, right?
Yeah, National Jongsan.
Oh, I mean, they do all sorts. They've got missiles, drones, mines, attack boats. It's an incredible place. I would love to learn more or see more about that place.
Speaking of drones, have you seen? We got an email recently by our group that we in saying that they're pushing for U.S. to work with Taiwan on drone development. I think that's important, because if you have more drones, you can use those on the battlefield against China. Even though they'll have their own drones, but if we could develop a strong drone army like Terry Guo want us to do back when he was running for president, that could help Taiwan's defense too, in a sense.
Yeah, easily deployable, right? Easy to use.
Right. But let me ask you a question right quick. How important is morale in the military?
That is an interesting question. I mean, I have not served in the military, public disclaimer. A couple of my friends have. I nearly did years ago, but funnily enough, as an English person, I failed my English exam by like 3 points, and so I couldn't get into the British Royal Air Force in the position I wanted to be in. And I'm a very stubborn man, and so I was like, nope, to hell with you. I think morale is important, but I think there's an aspect where when you're joining the military, I just do your damn job. That's the whole point of it. You can be unhappy about it, but where are you going to go? You agreed to this. You signed up for it. You've got a contract. And I know that's a huge voter issue in Taiwan. Like, they don't want to do things that might affect army morale. And what they really mean is voter influence. So I think with regards to Taiwan, that's a tricky question. Why? What are you thinking?
Well, here's what I'm thinking here. When Chai Ing-wen announced that she's going to reverse the Ma administration's 4 months of service to a year, a lot of people thought that, hey, this is going to be bad for the voters. But she had a vision. She was basically telling people, hey, 4 months is enough to train our troops. They need a year to actually learn how to do things. Because back in the day, you have to remember, Taiwanese military were considered to be a joke. Because back in the day, if you did a four-month period, it's like summer camp. All they did was sweep.
There was some kind of saying, I forget what it is in Mandarin, but it was like, when the army are in trouble, they call the police because they're incapable of doing it themselves.
Right, because the police are way more trained than the Taiwanese army right now. But what Chai Ing-wen did, she changed that. Because remember, I got to be honest with you, my brother. Ma Ying-jeou really dismantled the military. I'm going to tell you what he did to the military that really made me upset. When he was chairman of the KMT back in the day, he basically told his party lawmakers to boycott review of U.S. armed forces to Taiwan. He believed that the cross-strait war won't happen since China and Taiwan will be integrated economically. Basically, he's a traitor to his nation for that. He changed the military structure from conscription to a volunteer force. He also, like I said, before, he changed it from a year to 4 months. Right.
They didn't quite pull off volunteer force. That was the eventual aim. You know, much like his, what was it, the trade deal, the services deal.
Yes.
I heard they might be pushing again. Who knows? That's all well and good, Najee, but what do you think is the plan long-term for peace? How would you create a peace with the belligerent People's Republic of China?
I'll say the most unrealistic thing, two of them. We should have given up Jinmen and Maju a long time ago.
You want to surrender islands? Are you mad?
No, I'm going to tell you why. You know who my favorite historical person was in U.S. history?
Go on.
His name was John Foster Dulles. He was the Secretary of State for Dwight Eisenhower back in the 50s. And as you know, Dwight Eisenhower was the most proud pro-Taiwan president that we ever had in America. Basically, John Dulles basically told Chiang Kai-shek, Jinmen and Maju, there's no strategic value for Taiwan's security. It's only a hindrance. And these two our islands could easily be taken over by the PLA due to proximity to China. Jinmen's about 1.8 miles from China. Maju's about 10 miles away from China. And if you notice with the U.S. Sino mutual defense agreement that was signed in the 50s, it only covered Taiwan and Penghu, not Jinmen and Maju, because to the U.S. point of view, Jinmen and Maju were basically Chinese outer islands. It wasn't part of Taiwan. And he said that if you give those back to China, then you won't have the problem. You won't have that problem militarily. But Chiang Kai-shek, like always, basically offered RAFOR, then the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that Jinmen and Maju were the last footholds of his government on soil that has continuously been Chinese, and that he could not voluntarily abandon these islands and maintain the support of his people. So the reason why Chiang Kai-shek said that is because he didn't want to create a illusion of two Chinas or one China, one Taiwan. He was against that. So here's what Dwight Eisenhower said.
Go on. Carry on.
This is the last point I want to make here. Dwight Eisenhower said, those damn little offshore islands, sometimes I wish they will sink. Here's my thinking of that. We should evacuate the people first off of Jinmen and Maju. Then let them sink because they're doing nothing but being a hindrance to Taiwan. Look what's happening with Jinmen right now, what China's doing around that area now.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. When you put it like that, that's a very, very strong point. What do you think of the Senkaku Islands, Senoku Islands?
Senkaku. Here's the thing with the ROC Constitution. ROC Constitution have all these claims throughout the world. They even claim Mongolia, even though Mongolia is an independent nation.
I thought they scrapped that now. They recognize the independence of Mongolia in the 90s or something, I think, in the early 2000s. But no, you're right. I certainly see what you're saying about those islands. But to me, it's very much if they're a canary in a coal mine, right? there, the early warning radar system. And as soon as you give a communist an inch, they will take a mile. And you're right in saying that they are more trouble than they're worth, but then you're moving that defensive line backwards. And so you're inviting more trouble.
But you wouldn't put all your resources to Jimin and Maju anyway because they're so small. You'll put them with Taiwan and Pongku because the Chinese know, oh, if you want to invade the mainland of Taiwan, we got to do amphibious war assault on those two, on the main island of Taiwan. Jimin and Maju, they could take those easily because of how close they are to China. And look at the Taiping Islands. Yes. So
Taiping isn't an island, right? It's just a
strip
of grass on a rock. But you're right. They could take those islands, but then you would see what's coming. You know, maybe it's different country thinking where I come from. We would try to keep as many strategic islands. And sure, there is an argument that these aren't strategic, but they're a fantastic resource for keeping an eye on what the communists are doing. And if you get rid of that, you're blinding yourself in one eye to try and have some faith that they're not going to invade you further. And they will.
You have a good point on that part, because if you look at Jimin and Maju, they have some radar that can track POA activities. But like I said before to you, they are only a hindrance. I'm not saying give those now because it's too late. You can't get those up now. But back in the 50s and 60s, you could have got away with that because, okay, those are not. But now you can't get away with that now.
There was a lot that should have changed in the 50s and 60s, right? Hindsight's a wonderful thing. Tiaoyutai Islands, what do you think about those? Those are Japanese, right?
Yes. Yes, they're Japanese, because if you look at history here, they were under a U.S. administrative military roles to the 70s. And you didn't hear China complain about those islands until at least middle of the 2010s, when Japan actually bought those islands and nationalized them. Then China said, oh, those are our islands. How dare you take those over? But you never claimed those anyway before the mid-2010s. So what are you complaining about, China? Those are not your islands anyway.
Yeah. Who was it? Was it Chen Shui-bian? No, it was Li Denghui, right? Who he was like, no, these have always been Japanese, because he was a Japanese citizen.
Japanese.
Mr. Democracy. I mean, he had an interesting view on the ROC, right? Because for a time he was very ROT, and then he was like, no, it's ROC. Let's just stop arguing about it and get on with it. And I think that's one thing we need for the sake of avoiding war is Taiwan needs internal unity. And it doesn't have that. And I think the DPP have been very good at trying to toe that party line of, you know, they're aware that any president who has tried to remove ROC from ROT has failed and has been, you know, for want of a better phrase, almost crushed. They needed to stay away from that hard line, as much as people like Lai are all for it. We need some unity, and then we can move forward to defend the mainland of Taiwan.
Right. The thing that concerns me is that I'm going back to military morale, because I read this about a couple weeks ago. Military morale has to be strong in the army, because if it isn't, you're going to get crushed easily. What I read was that some people, you see those cases all the time where old retirees will go to China, they will get money, and then they will set up a spy ring. And one of them said that, who are we defending? Are we defending Chiang Kai-shek's legacy, or are we defending Taiwan? That's what these old people think, because when they retire, they say, okay, I'm still young, whatever, let me go to China and make money. And China gets them because, like, oh, we can give you more money to this, just help us with the spy ring, get us classified information.
And I think that's been the great thing about Tsai, though. She has encompassed that. She has taken that on and said, okay, she has seen in future we need to encompass the fact that regardless of how much we do or don't like it, the ROC was, and in some capacity still is, a thing. And it needs to be a unifying point for all people, the good and the bad. Like, no nation has purely good history. You know, look at Britain and colonialism and the empire. But if we're to move forward, we have to kind of, that has to be a unifying point for the people in nation's history. So saying in a lot of her speeches, okay, 1945, that was when the ROC became, this is our history now. Embrace it also takes the power away from people like those generals who have retired, who are trying to earn a little bit of money. It takes the power away from the KMT as well. and you can all move forward as a people. Okay, we don't like the KMT, but KMT doesn't have to be ROC. We can embrace an ROC and eventually become an ROT whilst decapitating a kind of KMT snake.
I have a different view on that. Like, the difference between Taiwan, Britain, America is that Britain has always been called Britain, UK, England, name it. So always been UK's name.
I mean, those
name,
are loads America. Of different names, man, already. It was England and Scotland and then a United Kingdom and Great Britain as a set of islands. So we have changed our identity. America was the 13 colonies and then the United States.
And we changed over. But there's a difference. Those constitutions were made in those countries. Taiwan doesn't have its own constitution yet to speak of. I get what you're saying about we only be unified under its name, but if you look at the ROC wasn't created in Taiwan. It was created in China, in Nanjing, back in the day. So, a Taiwan nation doesn't exist as of right now, but I get what you're saying about all we need to be unified under this one brand. Then we go into the ROT once we get this over with. So I get what you're saying in that regard, but there's a difference between what you're saying and what's reality in Taiwan right now with the name. Because if you ask foreigners, Republic of China, they're going to pick up China first. They're going to pick up Taiwan. You guys sit there explain to them the history of that. So the name itself confuses a lot of people who I've been dealing with for the past 14 years. I have coworkers that ask me, oh, so Yank, Taiwan wasn't a Republic of China. You got to sit there explaining to them that history. So one of these days, hopefully that will get changed to the RLT. That way you just sit there explain to people this complicated history that Taiwan has. Because with UK is easy. UK, that's who we are. America, that's who we are. Taiwan, different story.
I suppose I don't disagree with you. I don't expect to see an ROT in our lifetime as much as I would like that. Okay. I think this is something that will continue into my children. And I certainly think, as President Tsai said herself, each generation has a different history. And I think the unfortunate or fortunate, depending on your political view, is that the ROC does exist as a brand. And there is no... there's no getting away from that. And the other side are always going to be there and you have to have this conversation with them. And so what's been good is people like organizations we have been known to work with pulling that window and others as well, you know, trying to shift that window. And you can see that even the KMT have changed where to get votes, they need to be less extreme, less pro-China. But I don't think any of that internal to Taiwan, regardless of what they're called, is going to stop the threat that is the CCP.
Right. I agree with you on that point. The thing about it is that, like you said, Taiwan needs unity. Taiwan's not unified as of right now because of people's thinking of what the country should be. Hopefully, they will get that one day. Hopefully, this next generation of Taiwanese that's coming up, hopefully, they will be the ones that bridge that gap to make Taiwan a unified country. Because here's the thing. If you're a unified country, China will never dare to attack you because you can't stop their unity. You can't break it up. China's able to do that because of constant warfare, fake news, name it. China is trying to destroy that unity because China knows that unified Taiwan, you can't beat us.
So I believe in the U.S., it doesn't matter. My understanding is whether you're here legally or illegally, you can still sign up to the American Armed Forces and then they just take care of it, right? Because they've got a warm body they can use. Is that right?
I never heard of, illegal here. Undocumented people being part of the Army. I never heard that part before, ever. I never heard that part, but I never...
Perhaps it isn't necessarily documented, but I'm pretty sure you don't need to be a U.S. citizen to join the U.S. Armed Forces. And I wonder if Taiwan could do something like that, like the French Foreign Legion, that you can bring people in...
Or Ukraine.
Yeah, I guess that's a more recent incident. I was trying to avoid that because there is a lot of similarities. Oh, well, Taiwan's the next Ukraine. And no, I don't think it is because... with the most respect to Ukraine, people will be willing to fight for Taiwan. It's a different situation. But I think that and more immigrants to Taiwan brings stronger points. Like this article I was reading, it states that now India has a lot more power and influence coming into Taiwan and vice versa. And I was recently in India and they love Taiwan. You know, so many of them are studying Mandarin or even Taiwanese. They love the TV shows, the food, you know, pop culture for Taiwan is everywhere there at the minute. And knowing how friendly they are as a counter to China, having more immigrants and maybe immigrants who could easily access the armed forces, because I'm sure there are a fair few of them who would, that would increase morale and increase troops and increase standing in all aspects.
Yes, I agree with that 100% with you, because if you increase how many people you have in the armed forces, you could also build up your reserves. And then with a stronger reserves, if the main troops are either died or whatever, the reserve forces can take over and do the job for you. So I agree with that. We need more foreign-born troops into Taiwan. Like I said, if I had a censorship, I'd join the heartbeat because I would do anything for my country. I'll leave my life online for Taiwan. So yes, and hopefully Lai Ching-De will do that, because he understands that we need more power. We need power that we can get, and we can get that through immigrants.
Well,
so
that
notion,
I agree
with you.
Soon to be vice president is schmoozing around Europe at the minute, which I think was a fantastic, fantastic thing
to
do.
I love her.
She already has friends in America. Why not move on to the next big power who could be friendly?
Let me tell you something about B. Kim Shao. I met her about 3 times. She is a total rock star. Like when I first met her, it was like I met Michael Jackson. That's how big of a person that she is. Because she has that presence, that glow, that feeling of, hey, I'm gonna be present one of these days. And I can feel that from her. And what I find interesting is that when she was in Europe, she didn't go to your country. She didn't go to France. She didn't go to Germany. She went to Czech Republic, Lithuania, and Poland, who are those little Central Eastern countries. Mm. I find it funny with Europe is that countries, the Baltic state countries and those Eastern European countries are more anti-communist, more for Taiwan, while Western Europe is more like, oh,
Western Europe's policy is very much trade through peace, right? Which will be the downfall of them. But you know, I was reading somewhere that Europe spends more on its military than nearly every other near peer competitor. It's just they buy 28 versions of the same thing, right? Because they don't have a federal armed forces, much like the PRC with the People's Liberation Army and the USA with your Eagle Force.
Right.
Whereas if they were to do that, they would almost be unstoppable too. And a lot of Eastern Europe, I think, is probably relying on that at some point. You know, they were all once underneath the thumb of the Soviets, right? China's now new best friend. That must be really paining Putin to be taking second fiddle.
That is correct in that regard. Because if you look at Russia was supposed to be this big bad guy, but besides the military, Russia can't threaten you. China can threaten you multiple ways. It can do with cyber,
smarter,
economically, economically and militarily. That's what makes China a dangerous threat to the world, because they have all three of those phases. Russia would dream to have that capability, but they don't have that because, I mean, come on, name me a Russian product. I can't think of it. Name me something from Russia. I can't even name it.
No, you got me there. I don't know anything.
I just don't know. I don't know anything either.
Russian music.
I don't know anything about Russia.
No. Well.
But with China, I can name TikTok, which I hope it gets banned in America. You have WeChat, you have Zoom, you have all these other apps that China made. Also, back in the day, China was known as the world factory of clothing and whatnot. So Russia don't have that.
Yeah, Russia don't have any ammunition either. What do you think? I heard some plans about trying to create U.S. ammunition, like manufactories within Taiwan. I can't remember where I read that. It was maybe a week or two ago. But to try and boost production, because it's become pretty evident that America cannot fulfill its promises in a lot of senses. And that's not necessarily like federal America, but Boeing or, Lockheed Martin, etc. Do you think that's a good idea? Build them in Taiwan? We're doing a pretty good job building our own missiles anyway.
Yes. And that quote that you got, that was from when Mike Gallagher's committee on China came to Taiwan and the Democrat... And the Democrat, I forgot, I can't pronounce his name to save my life. He's the one that mentioned that. And I agree with that, because if you manufacture those missiles, anything in Taiwan, then the U.S. doesn't have to worry about the bottleneck they face right now with its defense industry. So I agree with that. Plus, two, it will also raise Taiwan's defense industry profile as well. Because if you make anything domestically, you can quickly make them. You don't have to worry about relying on a foreign entity for your weapons. You can make them at home yourself. I noticed some technology that you have to get from America, that's perfectly fine. But if you can make majority of the weapons in Taiwan and just get it down from the U.S., you'll be better off. Taiwan.
Cool. Well, always a pleasure to talk with you, Mr. Yang. I hope everybody tunes in next week. It is goodbye from me.
And goodbye to me too.